The biggest question in the strategic community across the world is, what is Putin thinking? What's on his mind? So if you think that I am going to answer that question today in this episode of Cut the Clutter, you are in the wrong place. In fact, my response to you then would be something like, agar tumhi samajh sako, mujhe bhi samjhana, right? Aapko gana yaad hai na? Likha hai teri aankhon mein kiska fasana? Usko chhod do. We are not here to mind read Putin, but an entirely new genre, or I would say super specialization, has now come up in the global strategic community of people trying to psychoanalyze Putin. What is Putin thinking? Now, smarter people can do that. We are meanwhile looking at what is Putin doing and what is Putin saying. So one, we know that in the last 36 hours, two major indications have come up. He's made two major statements. One, through an action, that is the launch of his latest ICBM, which has been in the works for quite some time, the Sarbat series or SR-28, which NATO has given the code name of Satan 22. This is a different kind of ICBM from what the Russians have had as yet. This was tested yesterday, that is Wednesday this week, and this was tested from an underground silo in a place called Plesetsk, Plesetsk, in northwest Russia. And from there, it went flying across towards the east into the Siberian area, over the Siberian area, and fell in Kamchatka Peninsula. You can see that on the map and see how distant is that. It's almost about 5,000 to 5,500 kilometers, 3,500 miles or so. Now, what was Putin trying to say with that? He just made a short statement which wasn't cryptic. He said, this is a warning to anybody. This provides food for thought for those, his words. This should provide food for thought for those who, in the heat of frenzied, aggressive rhetoric, trying to threaten our country. And the Russians claimed that this missile had the ability to evade any anti-missile defense system. Now, if I read up the stuff that all the experts are saying, they're saying that's not quite true, but this is quite a formidable new missile because it carries multiple warheads. Those warheads can be decoys also. Those warheads can go in different directions. And some of these warheads can also be hypersonic. So this is quite a package. So you know what happens when a missile launches many warheads and they go in different directions and they are all targeted on different targets? It's called MIRV, M-I-R-V. I know that the nerds amongst you know all this, but since a lot of us are not nerds, I will tell you, MIRV stands for Multiple Independently Targeted Reentry Vehicles, and these carry warheads. In this case, these warheads also include boost glide hypersonic weapons, those we spoke about in an earlier episode of Cut the Clutter. So what is he saying? He's saying, look, I've got my new missile ready. This is not yet battle ready. This is not yet operationally ready. This launch has been postponed, delayed many times. It's almost 3 years delayed. So why is he launching it now? Also, this will have to go through another 5 or 6 launches this year to become operationally viable. Although Russia had claimed earlier that by the end of 2022, their first regiment with this Sarmat missile would come up, but unlikely that will happen because it needs a further 5 or 6 tests later this year for this missile to be able to deployable. So why is Putin doing it? Now, first of all, I will remind you, when Op Parakram began in January 2002, just after the parliament attack by terrorists in mid-December 2001, India piled its forces on the borders with Pakistan and threatened to go to war with Pakistan. What did the Pakistanis do? Pakistanis began launching one missile after the other, tests not at India. And each one was named after some famous old Muslim conqueror of India. Abdali, Ghori, stuff like that. And these were meant to scare India. And these were also meant to scare the rest of the world into believing that Pakistanis have a short threshold and push comes to the shove, they will use nuclear weapons and they have all these missiles. So this was psychological warfare not just with India, but also with the rest of the world. And that's when a question was raised at a press conference, the usual customary press conference by the Ministry of External Affairs. And Nirupama Rao, who used to be the spokesperson then, she was asked about these missiles and missile tests. And she said, we are not impressed. That was a very short and brilliant answer. So chances are that Putin is doing the same thing now, that he's trying to show off this new missile to the world, saying that, look, I have nuclear weapons. And if you think that you have strong anti-missile defenses, I now have this new missile which can go over any of the poles, which can then release multiple warheads. These multiple warheads can include hypersonic glide weapons, which you will find even more difficult to catch. So don't mess with me. And that is where he's also adding this warning. So this could be to shore up his people's morale. This could be to shore up his troops' morale. This could be to shore up his own morale. But this could also be an action in some kind of, I would not say fear or panic, but what happens when you feel cornered, as say the Pakistanis did in the first half of 2002. After that, things sort of settled down on the borders and it became some kind of a stalemate. But first few months, the Pakistanis were very cornered. They had global condemnation and they were really worried that India will go to war. Maybe Putin is also driven in this case by some psychology like that. Once again, you can make your own interpretations. I am not going too much into it. I'm just telling you what exactly has happened. In fact, if I read the American media, there's an article by David Sanger in the New York Times. David Sanger is a very reputed American writer on strategic issues and other related issues, politico-strategic issues. And he says that, look, this might show us that Putin is driven in a corner, that if Russia is reduced to a pariah state, then Putin will be more inclined to make mischief. Now, there is also criticism of that article from people saying that why is someone like David Sanger buying into propaganda like this or an idea like this, which is basically nothing but psychological warfare by Putin and his people. So I don't know what the facts are in that case. But in this article, David Sanger's article, he also quotes William Burns, the chief of CIA. And that's a very interesting quote. William Burns, who is a well-known scholar as well, scholar diplomat, he says, quote, declining powers can be as disruptive as rising ones. So it's a very interesting thought that, you know, you have this alliance now between Russia and China, although they say this is not an alliance, it's a very close relationship, whatever. One is a rising power and is disruptive in the region and for the entire world, that's China. The other is a declining power and that's also being disruptive. Although right now the declining power is more visible and is more directly disruptive. So he says declining powers can be as disruptive as rising ones. And then he adds the risk appetite has grown in Russia with Putin as Putin's grip on Russia is tightened. So we don't know what is happening, but that is one big indication that's come from it. Now, the second thing that's happened is, again, very unusual. Now, Russian Ministry of Defense also has a Telegram channel. And I also get what they post on my Telegram address, my Telegram number from them. So they posted a video today. It's a very interesting video because such things are only done when you want to convey a message, not to me, by the way. This video has been mass mailed to all kinds of people and it has made international news and headlines already. Because you know why? The big prize over which the fight is going on right now in Ukraine or the southern or southeastern Ukraine is the city of Mariupol. And we had talked about why Mariupol is so important in our episode 965, of which I will share a link with you. Now, Mariupol is where the Russian forces have been fighting now since the day the invasion began. And they've still not been able to capture this city. This is the 10th largest city in Ukraine, 100th largest in Europe. It's a city of about 4.5 lakh people. It's also critical. It's on the Sea of Azov, right on top of it. And it's only if the Russians can conquer this entire city or control this entire city that they get a land corridor to connect their forces in the Crimean Peninsula with those in the Donbas area. Then they have a passage and forces can move from one side to the other, and they can then use these ports in the Crimean region to also resupply their forces. That fighting's been going on. And every day, someone or the other says that Mariupol is about to fall, about to fall, about to fall. What's happened in Mariupol is that almost the entire city has been captured by the Russians some time back. Never mind that the city is completely reduced to rubble. Almost all of it has been destroyed so already. But one part of the city, that is about 5 square miles. That's not a small area in a city. 5 square miles, and that is all a steel plant. This is a steel and metallurgy plant called Azovstal. Now, Azovstal, A-Z-O-V-S-T-A-L. Azovstal is one of Ukraine's largest steel industries. One of the world's largest also, because Ukraine has had a lot of industry from the Soviet times, and even lately they've built a lot. They also have a lot of military industry. For example, the frigates that the Russians are making over for us, the engines for them come from Ukraine. Similarly, AN-32 aircraft that we fly, some parts of Mi-17 helicopters, those come from Ukraine. So Ukraine has a lot of industry. Now, in this industrial plant, a large unit or a large sets of forces of really strong, tough, elite Ukrainian soldiers have taken refuge. They are sitting in this factory and they are saying they'll fight to the last man. Putin, his armed forces, his government, Putin personally also, they've made appeals to these soldiers, these Ukrainian soldiers, to surrender. They even gave them, or promised them, safe passage once, that look, we'll declare a ceasefire, drop your arms and go away, nothing will happen. But nobody trusted them, because they remember that in 2014, when Russians had captured Mariupol the first time, similar offer was made, and those who took the offer and were walking out were then slaughtered. So nobody wants to take that chance again. So these soldiers are in the factory and they are now determined to fight. So everybody thought that now Putin's army is going to storm the plant and take whatever damage or whatever losses it causes, but they will now capture that plant and be done with it. What's happened today is this video that Russian Ministry of Defense has released. There first, the Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu, he gives a long full report to Putin on what's happening in the battlefield, particularly in Mariupol. And he says all of Mariupol is in our control. In fact, the city is quite calm. We are putting the city in order. We've also taken 90 buses there. We've given people in the Azovstal plant to leave and not to take any chances. We've got cameras, etc., aerospace cameras to track this. I presume aerospace cameras mean satellite cameras. And he said, but people haven't come out. Only 100 civilians have come out. Soldiers have not come out. So he tells Putin that now this plant remains. It will still take us a few days to capture this plant. We have forces ready, our own forces, and also Donbas, quote-unquote, nationalists. That is, those people, Russian-speaking people, their militias, who may be aligned with the Russian troops. I presume that those units also include Chechens who come in all the way from Grozny. Those are Chechen soldiers led by Ramzan Kadyrov, who is the son of the Mufti of Grozny, who now collaborates with Putin. And he again announced today that by this afternoon, all of Mariupol will fall to the Russian forces, including the Azovstal plant. And then I read in the Russian media, not in the Ukrainian media, in the Russian media, that he routinely makes those announcements. It's the 26th time that he has announced that all of Mariupol, including Azovstal, is going to fall today. But Azovstal is not fallen. Now, after the defense minister is given this report, what does Putin do? I can do no better than quote one passage directly to you, and some of the other passages you will see running on my screen from the transcript of this conversation that the Russian Ministry of Defense has put out. This is a Russian MOD release and their translation, and see the lines. So the most important thing is that Putin has declared victory more than once. He has also congratulated his defense minister, and he's also told him to congratulate his troops for the victory in Mariupol, which means he thinks that Mariupol is in the bag. But he also acknowledges that Azovstal is not yet taken. And then he says, I know it's not yet taken, but don't take it. Right? Don't take it. We don't have to take it. Just seal it. So not even a fly can escape, but don't take it, which means don't storm it. And he says in that statement, don't storm it because this may lead to a lot of loss of life on their side. And we should be mindful. We should also protect the lives of our soldiers and our people, our officers. Now, that's very interesting. And I see that much interpretation of that seems to be that this Russian army has already suffered heavy casualties, particularly after the sinking of the flagship of the Black Sea Fleet, that is Moskva, about which the Russians have not yet spoken out in terms of how many of the sailors lost their lives and the families are protesting. There seems to be some pressure that Putin is feeling, that the public opinion is getting impatient with what they might see as Putin government's callous attitude towards their soldiers' casualties. And that's why it was necessary for him to come out and say this. I will tell you what exactly has he said right now. He said, quote unquote, there is no need to climb into these catacombs. This is Russian translation. There is no need to climb into these catacombs and crawl underground through these industrial facilities. Block this off. So not even a fly can escape, right? And then as you will see on the text that I play on the screen, he says we have to be mindful of the safety and the good health of our own troops, etc., etc. So you can see that he now wants to declare a limited victory. His initial objective was to capture Kyiv and basically crush Zelensky government, get this regime out, install a friendly regime. All that hasn't happened. So he's bringing it down. He's scaling it down now to a victory in Mariupol, not even victory in all of the Donbas, victory in Mariupol, because it seems that 9th May is going to be a big event for him. 9th May is the anniversary of the defeat of the German armed forces in the Second World War, of the defeat of the Nazis. And that is when big parade takes place in Russia. So he wants to declare victory on that day. And if he can say that Mariupol is in my bag, that will be by far the most important landmark he would have captured. He also has another smaller city of Kherson, which is not far from Mariupol, that his forces have captured. But beyond that, they haven't captured any city. So this might be a way of declaring victory. But at the same time, not risking storming this Azovstal plant. Now, what is it that is so complex about this plant that even the great Russian army, which now must have 100-to-1 superiority in numbers and firepower in that area, that they are not willing to storm it? So that's a very interesting story. And I will share with you a link from Radio Free Europe. And I know it's Radio Free Europe, but this is not opinion. These are straightforward pictures from a Czech photographer who was earlier allowed access into this plant, and he's taken these pictures. And you can see what the plant looks like, etc. I'm sharing a link with you. But the history of this is very interesting. It looks like this plant existed before the Second World War. In the earlier Soviet times, it was built in 1933. It employed 10,000 people as of now. So it's a very large plant. It employs 10,000 people. In 1941, this plant stopped functioning. Why? You can imagine, because Hitler came in, Hitler's forces came in through Poland. There was a blitzkrieg in Poland. Then he took over most of Ukraine. And then when it went into the Russian mainland from here. So when that happened, the steel factory was so crucial to the Soviet Union that they shifted the entire steel factory. They shifted the entire steel factory and took it east of the Urals. So their steel production could continue because steel production was so critical in that war. When the war ended, the Soviets again decided to bring it back to where it was, which is Mariupol. When they brought it back again, because they had once seen a world war and this place was threatened, they didn't want to risk that again. So before they rebuilt the plant, they built massive bomb shelters and underground facilities in the same area so that tomorrow, if something like this happens, we'll have protection there. So it is these bomb shelters and these underground warrens which now exist where these troops, Ukrainian troops, are hiding. A lot of the civilians are also hiding, but Ukrainian troops, 500 of whom seem to be wounded. So I will also share with you a couple more things. See these tweets. This is Serhiy Volyina, the commander of the 36th Separate Marine Brigade, as it's called. It's a legendary brigade in Ukrainian armed forces. He's speaking and he's saying that, look, I have 1,000 civilians and 500 wounded soldiers. At least let them come out. But we will continue fighting. We will not surrender. Also, I am sharing with you a tweet thread from Elena Mikhailova, who is a deputy of the Kyiv City Council. You can see from her Twitter bio. Also, see the picture she has on her Twitter bio. Never mind. She's like, I mean, I would say, if I translate it loosely, like a municipal councillor in the city of Kyiv. She's translated a Facebook post that this commander of the 36th Marine Brigade has written, Serhiy Volyina, in which he describes the situation and asks for assistance by way of weapons, food, medical care, etc., etc. And she's taken out small highlights from it and put these in a thread. So please check out that thread. So why has Putin spoken out this way? Why has he first congratulated his defense minister and his armed forces for their, what he calls as great victory in Mariupol? At the same time, he's saying, my instruction to you, my order to you is, don't storm this steel plant, Azovstal. And why are they putting out this video with subtitles for the entire world to see? So I see an article written by Leonid Volkov, who's an ally of Alexei Navalny, who is the dissident who Putin has jailed, and we spoke about him also in an earlier Cut the Clutter. He says, look, when Putin's government decides to go public with statements like this, then it almost certainly proves that they are feeling the pressure of public opinion. And I think I'd rather go with that. So you have two things now. One, you have a statement made through this missile launch. And the second, you have a statement made through this released video where he's telling us, he's congratulating his soldiers for conquering Mariupol, and also at the same time to stay out of this 4 to 5 square mile factory premises, which has this formidable extensive bomb shelters and a warren of tunnels connecting them. He does not want to get caught up there, because you know what? We think of guerrilla warfare. We think, oh, it happens in jungles. That's where people, guerrillas, can hide behind trees or behind hills or mountains. Fighting in built-up areas, what the armed forces call FIBUA. I keep telling you, armed forces love acronyms. So FIBUA, fighting in built-up areas, is also a very difficult thing, because you know there, defenders have many places to hide, and defenders can break themselves into very small groups. And now, with shoulder-fired missiles and weapons, they can make your lives very difficult. And that's what the Russians have already suffered fighting in Mariupol and other cities. They've taken very heavy casualties, and they don't have the stomach right now to get into this steel plant and fight with people, to have the last fight with people who are actually on a suicide mission at this point of time. So it does look like that with one action, Putin is giving out a warning to the world. On the other, he is also justifying cutting his losses.